Now, live from deep beneath planet Earth and beautiful downtown Florence, it's the Enviro Show on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM, Northampton.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Churn world, serve its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up an ox, speak, grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with fear. Fight down high. Fire and a fire representing seven games in the government for hire and a combat site. Left to us are coming in a hurry with the furies breathing down your neck. Team, my team, reporters, babble, Trump, tethered crop. Look at that. No plane. Fine. Then, uh-oh, overflow. Population, common poop, but it'll do. Save yourself, serve yourself. World, serve its own needs. Listen to your heart. Slash and burn, return, listen to yourself, churn. Locking in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive, centering, light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch your heel, crush, crush, uh-oh. This means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steering clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world.
Lester Banks, birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom, symbiotic, patriotic, slam, butt, neck, right?
Go. It's the Urban Enviro Show. Greetings, Earthlings. I'm one of your co-hosts, Dio. I'm here with...
I'm Glenn Ayers.
And Jean is still in Germany. I think she was in an action the other day.
Excellent.
The orange block or something.
Hi, Jean. Hope you're having fun and raising hell.
Indeed. It's time to talk about Mother Earth, the urban dweller. She's stressed. She's pressed in. She's not happy. Jonathan Bates, board member of Nuestras Raíces, joins us to discuss that Holyoke organization's work to protect the urban environment and create sustainable models for city living.
To reclaim the urban wilderness.
As always, we'll be checking out the latest from the Enviro Show Echochamber, the quote of the week, and naturally, the latest dastardly deeds from the Empire. But first, it's time for... Revenge of the Critters. This one is a listener suggestion. Parrot won't talk, at least not to the cops. We're not sure where the revenge comes in here, but maybe Glenn can figure that out. Lost parrot tells veterinarian his address, Wednesday, May 21st. When Yosuke, the parrot, flew out of his cage and got lost, he did exactly what he had been taught, recite his name and address to a stranger willing to help. Police rescued the African gray parrot 2 weeks ago from a neighbor's roof in the city of Nagoyama near Tokyo. I hope I pronounced that right. After spending a night at the station, he was transferred to a nearby veterinarian hospital while police searched for clues. Local policeman Shinjiro Yumara said he kept mum with the cops, but began chatting after a few days with the vet. "I'm Mr. Yosuke Nakamura," the bird told the veterinarian, according to Yumara. The parrot also provided his full home address, down to the street number, and even entertained the hospital staff by singing songs. Quote, "We checked the address, and what do you know? The Nakamura family really lived there. So we told them we found Yosuke." And the Nakamura family told police that they had been teaching the bird its name and address for about 2 years, but Yosuke apparently wasn't keen on opening up to police officials.
Obviously didn't go for the uniform, probably.
Quote, "I tried to be friendly and talk to him, but he completely ignored me," Yumura said. The cop, Yumura. All right, now, where's the vengeance in that? Revenge against the cops?
I don't know. Yeah.
It's good. We like it anyway. Thank you, listener, for that helpful one. And now we'll move on to the Enviro Show Echo Chamber. And this just in from the Montague Reporter, the state investigation into the remarks made by Massachusetts Aeronautics Commission Director Robert Welch has officially concluded. You may recall from our last show.
Right, we talked about this.
Welch was the guy who said tree-hugging Indians were holding up progress on the proposed Turner's Falls airport expansion. Welch has resigned as of June 4th, according to Clark Jessen, Director of Communications for the Executive Office of Transportation. So, will the Turner's Falls Airport Commissioner, Mark Fairbrother, who called Narragansett's trying to protect a sacred site rock-hugging Indians, follow Welch into the dustbin of history?
We can only hope so,
We
right?
can only hope so. That's
See ya.
True. That would be fair,
yeah.
Brother.
Yeah.
Okay. And this from Grist, the Hulk. Talks up low-income housing.
Hey, the Hulk is green.
Yes. Have you seen it?
No.
It's a definite drive-in theater movie, I think. Is it out yet?
I don't know.
Ed Norton, of course, is the Hulk, and he will go green, literally, next month when he hits the big screen. Oh, it's next month in June. The Incredible Hulk. But on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, he was on the Hill talking up the virtues of going green, figuratively, in our building practices. Norton appeared before the House Select Committee for Energy Independence and Global Warming, along with experts in the green building field, to talk about why building green is better for the planet and your wallet. Norton is a trustee for the Enterprise Foundation, which works to bring green building practices to low-income housing developments. Quote, "The fastest way to make the most progress most quickly on climate change is by reducing energy waste in buildings," Norton told the committee. "The most cost-effective ways to do that are by retrofitting existing buildings." Hey, we support that.
Yep.
"While the deepest energy and greenhouse gas reductions can be made in new building as they come online, major gains are achievable by applying what we know today." Also at the hearing was San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, who has been leading a crusade to have his city adopt the greenest building codes in the country. If his plans are approved by the city's Board of Supervisors, all new projects and renovations in the city will be required to comply with the strictest leadership in energy and environmental design. That's LEED. You've probably heard that acronym before. Standards by 2012. The city began fast-tracking permits for developers who voluntarily meet the LEED standards last year. Buildings are responsible for 48% of all greenhouse gas emissions, and I think we've talked about that on previous Enviro shows. It's estimated that 76% of all the electricity that U.S. power plants generate each year is used to keep buildings running. Yesterday's hearing, or last Wednesday's hearing, was intended to examine the ways that efficient buildings and better building policies can reduce energy costs and cut their contribution to global warming, and how government policies can support that transition. So, that from Grist. Moving on. Oh, if you go to the Enviro Show blog, our bonus blog special series on smartish cities, and that's also from Grist. It's been running for weeks now. And
Those are sort of smart cities?
Yeah, sort of smart. It's not, not like the dumb cities. Those old school dumb cities. Yeah. Sort of smartish. So, of course, our blog, just go Google in the Enviro Show. You will get there. And also, leave a comment. We'd like to hear from readers and whatnot. And
listeners.
Listeners.
Yeah, too.
But yeah, but a reader of a blog, listener to the show.
Sure.
Either one can leave comments on the blog. Just Google it, Enviro Show. We also are on MySpace, but I forget the address. Just go to the MySpace search.
MySpace, Enviro Show.
Yeah. I can't even get into MySpace anymore, so I haven't updated that. And of course, we're on the new Valley Free Radio blog.
Yeah.
Yes. That's valleyfreeradio.org. Check that out. Okay, I think it's time for see what Darth Chaney is up to.
The evil Lord.
The boy emperor. Save us. How much longer, Glenn?
Oh. Too long, I'm afraid to say, too long. It looks like, according to the backwards Bush countdown timer, we have 237 days, 5 hours, 17 minutes, and 15 seconds. That's all we have left of the Bush-Cheney regime. The
it's
horror
too long.
Show
it's too
has
long.
To end soon. Yeah, it's too long.
Way too long. I think they're barricaded now in the White House. Hey, but it looks like Henry Waxman is about to wax their collective ass, however. This also from Grist. You can't decide without the decider. Evidence that White House influenced EPA to deny California waiver. And, of course, this California waiver also concerns the Commonwealth and other states because it's all about greenhouse gas emissions. We're all in this together, folks. The White House influenced U.S. EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson to deny California the waiver it needed to regulate vehicle greenhouse gas emissions, according to evidence presented by the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. An EPA staffer swore under oath that Johnson at first was very interested in a full grant of the waiver and then considered a partial okay, but decided on a full denial after communicating with the White House.
Huh.
Toting subpoenaed documents. Toting subpoenaed documents and sworn depositions. That's such an old word. Committee head Henry Waxman, Democrat California, concluded in a memo, quote, "The record before this committee suggests that the White House played a pivotal role in the decision to reject the California petition, but it does not explain the basis for the White House intervention," close quote. Johnson has said the decision was an independent judgment. Coincidentally, Johnson is scheduled to appear before Waxman's committee next Tuesday to talk about White House involvement in watering down EPA's recently announced ozone standards.
Yeah, right. You know, if it wasn't for Waxman, there wouldn't be such a thing as congressional oversight. I mean, he's basically the only, Conyers.
Yeah.
He and Conyers.
Right.
It's about it. So pathetic.
Really. Also, getting their message across, conservative Christians launched skeptical climate campaign. And if you don't think this doesn't have something to do with the Bush regime, think again. Conservative religious leaders have launched a We Get It campaign that just goes to prove that saying something doesn't make it so. The campaign aims to gather 1 million signatures on a petition opposing climate change action with the argument that tackling global warming will hurt the world's poor. And we know how concerned they are about
that. No, they are. Yeah, seriously.
Quote, our stewardship of creation must be based on biblical principles and factual evidence, says the petition. We face important environmental challenges, but must be cautious of claims that our planet is in peril from speculative dangers like man-made global warming.
Yeah, what about all the fetuses, though?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What about that? The campaign is in large part a response to the Evangelical Climate Initiative.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This is some backlash, I guess.
Yes, yeah. Which urges climate-fighting legislation and notes that global warming ain't exactly going to be a party for the impoverished. So far, the We Get It petition has less than 100 signers. Well, I mean, this was a couple of days ago, so
yeah,
they
no,
have
they're probably up to
104
yeah,
by now.
Yeah,
but 200. Those include such climate savvy luminaries as Focus on the Family's chair James Dobson.
Yeah, he's great.
And which senator do you think might be signed on there? James Inhofe.
Oh yeah.
And Tom Coburn.
Right, Inhofe. It's all a hoax. Yeah. Yep.
So that.
Well, you know, if Jesus came back today, he'd never stop throwing up.
He would throw so many people out of the temple. What
yeah.
a mess.
Yep.
That's it.
That's it?
We get the quote of the week.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm all over
we
that.
We have something. Oh, we have music
I'm
for
all
the
over
quote
that.
Of the week.
Stop.
That's it. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Stop.
Yeah. Listen, I've been listening to, I got to get you a copy of it, The World Without Us. It's a book.
Don't know
but
it.
But I converted it to an MP3. I got a book on CD. It is awesome. I'm going to give it to you. We'll have to play some quotes out of that.
I did. I heard an interview with
it's great.
The author was interviewed.
It is really good.
Check that out.
Good stuff. All right.
Okay, but this quote goes way back. To 1888, so get in the Wayback Machine.
Way back.
In this country, the mass of the people are entire strangers to the sentiment of beauty. They deform whatever they touch. Will it always be so? John Burroughs.
Excellent.
York State naturalist extraordinaire. So tell us, here it is, over 100 years later. Will it always be so? Yeah, let's return to Toxic City.
Oh, yeah.
Toxic City by System of a Down. All right, folks, get ready.
Get ready.
This
it's loud.
This is raucous. And then we're going to be talking with Jonathan Bates.
There we go.
Fires, loud neighbors, flesh like reveries caught in the headlights of a truck. Eating seeds as a pastime activity. The toxicity of our city, of our city.
We go. System of a Down, Toxic City, second play on the Enviro Show. We're here with Jonathan Bates, who is one of the board members of Nuestras Raíces. Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Oh, I'm glad to be here.
Now, we'd like to know some of the issues that you guys are dealing with down there in Holyoke. And I know one of them has to do with the proposed transfer station.
Uh-huh.
Right? So, tell us what's going on with you guys.
Okay.
First, why don't you tell us about the organization?
I can do that.
Yeah.
Well, we're a grassroots organization, and we promote economic, human, and community development in Holyoke, Massachusetts, through projects relating to food, agriculture, and the environment. So, I guess since this is the environment show, that's definitely a big part of what we do at Nuestras Raíces.
Right.
I guess also to mention that Nuestras Raíces is in a community community that's a majority from Puerto Rican descent. A lot of families came back in the middle of this last century to work in the factories and to work in the fields of Massachusetts. And
right.
Now that both of those things are few and far between, there's a high unemployment rate in Holyoke.
Uh-huh.
So one of the goals of our organization is to kind of work with the community in Holyoke to kind of build a community of folks focusing on projects that the community deems important. And one of the main things we do is since 1992, there's been some folks in the community that have been organizing community gardens.
Right.
So that's where we started.
Some serious gardening going on there.
Serious
farming.
Gardening.
That's
yes.
What it is.
So we started from there, and of course, the environment is very, very much a part of agriculture. And agriculture is very important to the culture of Puerto Ricans. There's been a lot of environment work that we've done over the years. Right now, there's a community in the Springdale neighborhood where we do work, waste management wants to put a transfer station in that community. The history of that community is interesting. Holyoke is in general was built as the first industrial city in the United States.
Supposed to be a model city.
Yeah.
Right.
First planned industrial city of the United States. So this particular community is very much like most of the communities in Holyoke, is a mix of residential and commercial. And unfortunately, some of the more intense commercial operations in Holyoke or in this community. So, you know, the sewage treatment plant is in that community. There's kind of green recycling waste facility, you know, where you bring your grass and clippings and leaves and brush. It's in the same community. And
it's
right,
composting
essentially. Yep. And right next to those two facilities is where there used to be a incinerator, and this incinerator was knocked down a number of years ago. And it's an empty lot, but it's the only lot in Holyoke that is zoned for waste facilities. So,
is it brownfields officially?
Probably. Yeah. I don't know officially if it is. Long story short, there's a project that we've been helping to organize that started in the community, but we joined after, called Hope. And that project has been fighting the city in putting this waste transfer station in their community. And that's kind of the story there, I guess.
Right. So where would the garbage come from that would go to that facility?
Well, United Waste Management of Holyoke, who is run by Scott LeMay, he's the CEO, he says that a majority of the trash and other waste is going to be coming from Holyoke. But he doesn't really define what he means when he says that. The fear is that once they build a facility, they'll be trucking in waste from outside the city.
Sure.
And in that case, what happens is you have more trucks, you have more dangers of large trucks going through residential neighborhoods,
especially
more pollution.
All the diesel exhaust from all those trucks.
Right, yes.
Yeah. Holyoke already has a very high asthma rate, and you know, that would just obviously make it a lot worse, right?
Exactly. And I think really the push to fight this has come from the community of Springdale and their struggle that they're already struggling with in the city of you know, poverty and you know, ignoring of their community from the city and the fact that this was going to be kind of put in place without really any community involvement in the beginning.
Just yesterday, Environment Massachusetts, the organization, I think it's housed over in Boston or something, sent out this notice. One of the most dangerous forms of air pollution, dirty soot from diesel trucks and buses, is wreaking havoc with our health no matter the weather. The good news is there's readily available technology to cut down on hazardous diesel soot, and we're working to get the state senate to require Massachusetts trucks and buses to clean up. So if you go to their website, www.environmentmassachusetts.org, and check up their Help Us Dump Dirty Diesel campaign. It says the soot from outdated diesel engines is taking a serious toll on our health. Diesel soot causes almost 10,000 asthma attacks a year in the state.
It's bad.
And it cuts short the lives of 450 Massachusetts residents each year. And talks about some of the hot spots, and it sounds like Holyoke could become one of them.
Well, I think Holyoke already is.
It is.
An asthma hotspot.
So
yeah.
This would just aggravate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do already live downwind from one of the most dirtiest coal-fired power plants in Massachusetts.
The Mount Tom plant.
The Mount Tom plant.
Yeah.
So that already has a large effect on our community.
Sure.
So I guess it's important to talk about the environmental effect for sure. What's also important to note is that Nosos Reyesus is a much more of a holistic organization, and the environment is definitely one factor there. But what's interesting about what Hope is doing is they're trying to bring up more broad issues. That's one part. Mm-hmm. One important issue that's come up, although the city doesn't want to acknowledge it, is that there's some environmental racism going on here.
Yeah, for sure.
It's been a struggle. Almost a year ago now, the community came and tried to get a moratorium with the city council, and it was an overwhelming support from the city council. And then the city lawyer, along with the mayor of Holyoke, pretty much put a nix on that, and we're no longer able to have the moratorium on this. And because it would have been against the law, now some more of the city council are coming in favor of putting in the waste transfer station. So it's becoming even more of a challenge.
So do they? These are councilors that live next to this
facility? Yeah, I was going to ask. Yeah.
No.
They don't live in the neighborhood.
There's one. There's two councilors out of, I believe, 12 that live in that neighborhood of Springdale.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yep. That mm-hmm. sounds about right.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even the mayor, he lives in Holyoke, but he lives closer to West Holyoke, which is more rural. So he's not even really in the deep urban parts of Holyoke. So he doesn't live in the areas of Holyoke where things like this have a significant impact in the community.
For sure. Where does Scott LeMay, CEO of WMA, live?
He doesn't live in Holyoke currently, as far as I know.
Yeah. And not in Springdale, right?
No.
Yeah.
They all have names and addresses.
But I could mention a few other things that the organization does.
Yeah.
There's some really exciting things that are happening. 3 or 4 years ago, we purchased 5 acres of land from the city right along the Connecticut River.
Right.
And we are currently leasing about 25 more acres adjacent to that from the Sisters of Providence. It's pretty much one of the last remaining kind of untouched conservation easements along the river in Holyoke. And Nostris is now farming those 30-plus acres. And it's great because part of our mission is economic development. And what we've done is we've set up kind of an incubator program with training local folks who want to do farming in Holyoke. Over the winter, there's a 10-week course. And we train them and help them develop a business plan. And by the beginning of spring, we have graduation, and we choose our summer farmers, and they actually are, there's 12 farmers now starting their farms right downtown Holyoke.
That's so great.
Do you ever do like open house things so people come and visit and see the operation?
We have events all summer long.
Great.
Down on the river.
How do people find out about it?
You can go to our website. It's nuestras-raices.org, and that's spelled nuestras-raices.org.
Great.
So this food that's being grown there, what happens to the food from this 35 acres or 30 acres, whatever?
Yeah, good question. Because there's this holistic kind of view of how we want to run this organization and how the community wants it to run. The goal is to have these incubators help to incubate other businesses. So there's been a long-term restaurant downtown that we've leased space to. So the idea is, for example, there is that we as the farmers of Nuestras Raices will grow food for the restaurant, which then in turn helps the rent from that business help support the long-term sustainability of the nonprofit organization. And we have number of incubators like that. We also work with the Holyoke Food and Fitness Council, and the idea is to work on a larger project citywide to kind of change how food gets into the schools, how health and nutrition is looked upon in the city with the youth and adults in the city. And the idea, all these things, they definitely have an environmental effect. By us leasing and buying the land on the river, we are working with the youth to look into how the impact of the river, how the land and the river are impacting one another. And we've been doing water tests with the youth, and we've had studies done with the youth about how polluted the water is and things we need to do to help clean it up in the city and those kinds of things. So the land and the environment in Holyoke and Nuestras is definitely tied together.
Yeah. So if you have, what'd you say, 12 farmers? this summer?
I think it's about 12, yeah.
12 farmers. 12 farmers on 30 acres seems like pretty intense agriculture. What kind of systems are you using there? And are those the same systems that could be adapted to use in other places in the city where people could grow food on, you know, vacant lots and, right. you know, on other areas?
Well, it's interesting you ask. The back in 1992, we started as a community garden organization. And in fact, there are about a dozen community gardens throughout the city that have small, they're on small urban lots downtown. Traditionally, the economic development has been centered around those community gardens, actually. And historically, we've actually helped establish small economic support where the families that work in these small urban gardens are producing about $1,000 worth of food a year, each family. Right. In each garden, there's multiple families. So there's a lot of families just with the community gardens we're helping to support. But they're all organic. The project at the farm are small micro enterprises. So they're, you know, half acre to 2 acre spaces. About half the farmers are focusing on working with vegetables or other kinds of crops they're growing, like cut flowers, those kinds of things. But then there's another portion of the farmers that are actually raising livestock,
right?
As well, goats, pigs, chickens, sheep, rabbits. So it's a very diverse project. And more we're actually, Eric Tonsmeyer, who's the farm director, he's very involved with the permaculture community internationally in the United States and in Northeast particular. And he's trying to work more of the integration of systems approach to this farming where, excuse me, where you get the animals and the plants working together.
Right. Sure.
And one real fun project we've done in the last number of years is we've built animal tractors. So you might have heard of the term of chicken tractor, where you put chickens in a little pen that you can move around day to day. And
In Omnivore's Dilemma, they talk about using that system.
Well, we're developing pig and goat tractors, and we've actually been able to use it to rehabilitate some of the riparian zone along the river. Excuse me. I've been talking a lot here. So we'd put the goats in a pen and have them munch down the vegetation for a couple weeks, move them along, and then put the pigs in the pen the next round. And so the pigs tear up the roots and tubers and break down some of the land and mix in the manure.
Pull out the truffles.
Exactly. So what we're able to do is actually we start to redevelop excuse me, these areas.
Right. This is excellent. I want to go down and check this place out.
To revegetate them with native plants.
Uh-huh.
So it's another way to work in the environmental aspect of the project.
And then can you eat those animals when you're...
They do. They have pig roast.
Have pig roast.
Yeah. Which is it's a classical Puerto Rican cultural event, right? Pig roast. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. We have probably a good half dozen events throughout the summer where we're doing pig roasts on the farm.
Great. Yeah, I haven't been down there in years. When they first opened the original garden, I was there, but that was a long time ago.
Now, I'm familiar with the bakery. How does that fit into the picture?
Right.
Well, that's one of the, I guess you'd call it micro-enterprises. It was one of the first, started probably over around 5 or 6 years ago. That's L. Harding Bakery.
Right.
And Neftali is the business owner. And I encourage anyone to go out there and buy some L. Harding bread. It's delicious. It's baked right downtown Holyoke.
It's available all over the valley.
Yes.
We have it in the Village Co-op.
Yeah.
Currently, the grain from the bread is organic, but it's not, we're not growing grain on the farm, but it's something that might be able to be done in the future.
Yeah, we're going to have to start growing a lot more of our things locally.
For sure.
Yeah, and grain, I think quite a few of the bakers in the valley now are looking for local supplies for grains because the price of wheat and things has really skyrocketed in the last year.
Maybe instead of building more malls and motels and whatnot on the most precious bottom land in the whole U.S., we'd tear that up and plant some grains.
Yeah, well, the idea of redeveloping or reclaiming, you know, an urban wasteland, you know, whatever you want to call it. I mean, for a long time, our cities were totally written off as, you know, the zones where people were just left to rot, basically. Right. And the idea of turning them back into productive centers, and it really, I'm a big believer in the agricultural part of our country. You know, it was founded on agriculture, and really our Constitution was founded on the idea of farmers supporting democracy. And we really have to get back to that if we want to have something sustainable.
So Jonathan, what's the story with land? Like, in you say there's 12 community gardens in Holyoke. Some of that land must have been trashed. So is there some kind of process you have to go through to regenerate the soil and get rid of the toxins and stuff?
For sure. There's a lot of land in a lot of urban places around the country that is very toxic. And in fact, lead is a big factor in a lot of these places. Yeah. I don't know the particular history of the land we're working with in these community gardens, but I'm sure in a lot of cases what's either done is some of the topsoil is removed and unfortunately taken to a landfill. Or I know in some of the gardens I've worked in other communities like Springfield, we've actually just put a thick layer of compost and mulch over the original soil. And if you make it thick enough and if you do soil renewal, like adding lime and things like that, you can actually reduce the effect of lead in the plants that you're growing. Huh. And it's mainly the danger is small children. And if you're able to essentially, quote unquote, cap that layer, you know, polluted layer, if it's mainly is lead, cap it with a good thick layer of really good soil, you're actually keeping that soil under the ground so young children don't have access to it. You really shouldn't be growing things like potatoes and then, you know, handling the potatoes in land like that. But if it's really bad, soil might actually have to be removed and landfilled. And I've seen that done. There's other techniques. There's bioremediation where you actually grow plants and the plants take it up into their tissues, and then you have to then throw the plants away, unfortunately, because then they're toxic. But as far as I know, we haven't done a lot of that in Holyoke. It's mostly either been removing soil, contaminated soil, or capping it with new soil.
Right. And Glenn here is a soil scientist. Have you dealt with that kind of remediation stuff?
No, I've done some reclamation work, but on larger scale and reclaiming areas that were drastically disturbed from mining and things like that. But I've never really done any urban, urban renewal kind of farming, which is very, I think, very interesting. And has great potential for, cutting down on our carbon footprint and all kinds of everything you can think of to get the food, healthier food that's closer to people so that it's more nutritious when they eat it. It's a great idea.
Yeah, in fact, one of the most easiest techniques to using degraded land is planting plants like perennials, like fruit trees. Because most of the heavy metals can't cross the boundary between the adult plant and its progeny, like the seeds, through to the fruit. So you can even grow tomatoes in leaded soil and never worry about lead getting into the fruit because the lead can't get into the fruit. It can get into the leaves, but it can't get into the fruit. So there are strategies to growing food in degraded landscapes for sure.
Yeah.
Yep. So this is very exciting, I think, to have something like that in the valley.
Definitely.
It's a sign of, or the direction that we're going to have to move in as a society in order to result in some kind of sustainable future. Because the way our agriculture system is now, it's completely unsustainable.
It's insane. I mean, look where Walmart is. It's smack on top, you know, on Route 9 in Hadley. Yeah. It's smack on top of beautiful bottom land.
Prime farmland.
I think let's get a bunch of folks together and tear it down and
put
rip up
the
pavement and plant some corn.
Yeah. It would be a lot more useful.
It would be. What do you say, folks? If you want to do that, go to our blog, leave a note. We'll have an action.
Yep. Reclaim Walmart. But there's plenty of places in cities that really need to be reclaimed. And
these guys are doing it.
It's difficult because generations have been removed from that culture. But reintroducing it at the community level is where it has to happen. You know?
So the young kids getting into it?
Yeah, we've had a youth program almost since the beginning. This coming year, we actually have it really, we've brought to the next level. We actually have a youth program manager, and they'll be doing lots of work on the farm this year. It's a really important aspect of what we do, because if it's only us adults doing this project in Holyoke, it won't last. It really needs to be the next generation that takes an interest in it. Right. It's interesting that the youth are actually a microcosm of the larger organization. They have their own little garden. They actually do some sales at the local farmer's market. They raise some of their own animals. They are doing it for sure.
Yeah, that's great, because that's real, you know, for kids growing up in a city. They're pretty much surrounded by artifacts of civilization, if you want to call it that. And, you know, something like that with living organisms and something that's real is going to get them reconnected to the bigger, you know, picture, to the world that's out there. So it's awesome.
So they don't grow up thinking that food comes from the store.
Well, that's what most kids think. Yeah. You know, is food comes from supermarkets. And, you know, we're lucky to have some farmers markets here, but you go to bigger cities and it's not as easy to find.
And at least two youth that I know this year, we have one that's actually co-farming as one of the businesses, farmers on the property. And we also have a youth now that is on staff. So it's, you know, it's important not only for the organization to have the youth, but now we have, we've created professionals.
So are they learning from some of the older folks who farmed in the past?
Oh yeah. That's yeah. It's great. it's a good mentoring opportunity as well.
Yeah.
Good work.
I could also mention if you haven't heard about Montview Neighborhood Farm here in Northampton, there's a friend of mine, Lisa DiPiano, who's part of Pedal People, helped to start the Montview Neighborhood Farm. It's a human-powered, no petroleum farm right here in town.
Wow.
So if you ever want to, she has her own show here on Valley Free Radio. If you want to ever look them up, give her a call, and she'll get you in.
What's her show? Do you know?
I think it's one of the history show, maybe, that she does on Saturday or Sunday. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, great. So that's not at their house, right? It's a separate piece of land, isn't it?
It's right down the street from their house.
Uh-huh.
It's in the Mountview neighborhood. I'm not don't have the address at the moment, but it's online. If you look up Mountview Neighborhood Farm Northampton, you'll find it.
Cool. So let's get your web address again if people want to check out some of the upcoming events that you're doing.
Yeah, if you go to nuestras-raices.org, you can find out about our organization, what we do, and we definitely have a brand new events calendar on there, so you can check it out.
Great. And phone number?
Sure. It's 413-535-1789.
That's great.
Yeah, excellent.
All right. If you sit in with us a while and endure the bus stop billboard,
sure.
We have a whole slew of announcements here starting on Saturday, May 31st, at 8:45 a.m. to 1 p.m. Where on earth are we going? What can we do about it? And this is a symposium to explore these questions and bring about an environmentally sustainable, spiritually fulfilling, and socially just human presence on the planet. And this is at Mass Audubon Arcadia Wildlife Sanctuary at 127 Combs Road in East Hamp. And to register, you call 413-584-3009, extension 812, or you can go to their site. And this is the site for the people that are running the program. It's www.awakeningthedreamer.org. And also on Saturday, May 31st, hey, attention, ALF, folks.
What's ALF?
Animal Liberation Front.
Yeah, okay.
This just in. Protest at the homes of top financial supporters of Huntington Life Sciences.
All right.
Huntington Life Sciences, the animal torturers extraordinaire.
Huntington Animal Torturers, Inc.?
That's right. When? Saturday, May 31st, 2 p.m. Where? Wheeler's Frozen Desserts, 334B Mass Avenue, near the Symphony Tea Stop on the Green Line, and I assume that's just a meeting place. Why? Huntington Life Science kills 500 animals every day. 180,000 animals every year.
Are they eating them?
Without the continued support of a small handful of companies, Huntington will be forced to close their doors for good. Huntington is already $100 million in debt, with no bank, no insurance company, not even a sign outside. You want to learn more about that? Oh, that's a very long address. I'll put it up on our blog. So remember, that's Saturday, May 31st.
It's this Saturday.
This Saturday, 2 p.m., Wheeler's Frozen Desserts, 334B Massachusetts Avenue in Beantown. Check that out. Look out. Look out for the FBI. They'll be there, too.
Yeah, they're like one of the, you know, top terrorist organizations.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
that's
in the country, the right?
Environmental terrorists.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
FBI, threatless, for sure. Yeah.
Saturday, June 7th, 10 a.m., downtown Brattleboro. Come for the strolling of the heifers. Help awaken the rest of Vermont and the tri-state area. They'll be handing out literature and atomic red hots for the kids. You know what this is about. It's all about Vermont Yankee.
Meltdown.
Call 413-863-8952 or email cchang@nukebusters.org for more info on that Saturday.
Shut it down before it melts down.
Shut it down, please.
So how many towns passed a resolution?
A whole bunch, and some are still about to have their town meeting.
Yeah, many towns locally have passed resolutions asking for Vermont Yankee to not extend their license past 2012.
That's right.
Yeah, which is too long for me, but they want another 20-year extension. Forget it.
We'll have to have Deb Katz back on, have another nuke show.
Yeah.
Also Saturday, June 7th, 10 to 11:30 a.m., Reptile Survival, Hitchcock Center for the Environment at 525 South Pleasant Street in Amherst. You got to register for that. Call 256-6006. Reptile enthusiasts will be there. It will be a hands-on presentation that will be fun for all ages, featuring more than 10 different species of reptiles, brought to you by the Kiss a Lizard Show.
Yum.
Kiss a Lizard Show. That costs you $5 if you're a member and $8 for non-member. Also, by the way, at Hitchcock is Nature's Storytime, free every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Bring the kids. Pre-registration is encouraged but not required. Saturday, June 14, 7:30 p.m., Magpie performs at the Echo Lake Coffee House, Town Hall, Leverett, Mass. Terry and Greg are internationally known for their musical work in the environmental movement. And you want more info on that, on them, go to www.magpiemusic.com. Admission to the Echo Lake Coffee House, $12. $10 to seniors. Call Diane if you want reservations. 413-548-9394 or DIA Crowe, C-R-O-W-E, at yahoo.com. June 18th, 7:15 p.m. Nuclear power at what cost? Bangs Community Center and the Enviro Show is a co-sponsor.
All right.
Boltwood Walk Amherst, presented by Citizens Awareness Network, CAN, our friends at CAN. This important program will offer information from experts regarding nuclear power and how it affects our society. Merely 30 miles from Vermont Yankee, our local towns are subject to the effect of nuclear power in many ways, many of which are misunderstood and unclear, including energy supply, energy efficiency, renewables as alternatives to nuclear power, job creation, health risk, economic realities. And finally, Friday, June 20th and 21st, taking charge of our Energy Future Summit at UMass Campus Center. You want info on that, call 877-266-7543. All right. Next up The Voice of Reason.
Yeah, special edition.
A special edition of The Voice of Reason. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. A week from tonight is our sister show, Farm to Fork. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
Check out our blog. Google it.
What are we doing in 2 weeks? Show. Do you know?
2 weeks. What is it?
I can't remember.
I've forgotten. Check our blog.
Yeah.
It'll be there. Thanks again, Jonathan, for coming in.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me here.
You rock. You can also send us an email, EnviroShow@valleyfreeradio.org. We're going to go out with some spring birds. This is what it sounded like in my yard yesterday morning.
Yeah, well, I've been doing a lot of hiking, and especially early in the morning, and around 5:30, 6 o'clock, the birds are screaming in the woods.
Spring is here.
Yeah,
they're
it's
back.
Great. It's great to hear. So.
This is Dio saying adios.
And this is Glenn Ayers saying see you in 2 weeks.
Gene, come home.